Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, November 25th. Today, we're visiting with Colorado Sun Event and Marketing Director Christina Pritchett about the final events of 2022. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this date, in 1935, the Colorado Supreme Court reinstated a disbarred former Denver judge on his 66th birthday. Benjamin Lindsay had lived in California for years, and the court's action proved mostly symbolic, but recognized his unparalleled impact all the same. Lindsay and his family moved to Denver in 1880. Eventually, he was appointed by Governor Charles Thomas to a Denver court position. His responsibilities included orphaned children, and his knowledge of and sympathy for children in challenging circumstances increased after he secured a judgeship in 1901. Lindsay used his authority to establish a special juvenile court to remove young offenders from the general criminal population. For a quarter century, the popular jurist won re-election as his juvenile court system caught on nationwide. Lindsay worked with progressive advocates in the early 20th century, including reformers Edward Costigan, Upton Sinclair, and Teddy Roosevelt. Lindsay won a disputed election in 1924, although the state Supreme Court ousted him 3 years later. To protect a career's worth of youths, Lindsay burned his records in his backyard. Disbarred in Colorado at the urging of a former friend, Lindsay moved to Los Angeles and served as a judge there until his death at age 73 in 1943. The quote, kids judge still holds a place of honor in the annals of Colorado jurisprudence. Before we continue, a quick message from our sponsors at Kids Crossing. Kids Crossing believes all foster kids matter, including those who identify as LGBTQ+. If you can provide a stable, inclusive family environment built on love, acceptance, and respect, Kids Crossing will provide everything else you need, including training, in-home services, 24/7 support, and financial reimbursement. Learn more at kidscrossing.com. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you. And today we are visiting with Colorado Sun Event and Marketing Director, Christina Pritchett. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I am doing well. I always enjoy when you have a minute to join us and kind of tell us what recent events we had and what's coming up. So I do know that there was a great event last week, kind of a postmortem on the election midterm election season. Can you tell us a little bit about that event that we had last week?
Yeah, it was a really great event. We hosted, it was called Post-Election Perspectives, and we had our political reporter and editor, Jesse Paul. He had the virtual event on November 17th, where he brought in Colorado Sun data journalist and politics reporter, Sandra Fish. He had Colorado Public Radio public affairs reporter, Caitlin Kim, and Nine News reporter Marshall Zelzinger. They talked about their experience covering the whole election season, some of their favorite memories over the last few months, and it was really great. They got to answer a lot of reader questions that came in while the event was happening. So it was really entertaining. It was great to hear all the work that they've done over the last few months and just hear different perspectives since they all have different mediums that they're reporting for.
Exactly. And it was, I thought it was a great twist on events. A lot of times post-election, we end up talking to, you know, politicians or legislators. And this time, you know, like you said, Jesse and Sandra Fish just sat down and talked with other reporters from around Colorado and what their perspective was on the election. And it was indeed lively. Tell us some more about it.
Yeah, we actually have a clip that our listeners can hear, and the group is discussing some of the surprises that they saw during this election season. So go ahead and take a listen.
So the CD3 race wasn't like the only surprise. Obviously, it was the biggest one. So I want to chat a little bit about those, and I guess I'll dive into the ones that surprised me the most were the gains the Democrats made in the state House and the state Senate. And those were pretty shocking because they flipped like some really Republican seats talking about, you know, R+8, R+9 districts, Highlands Ranch, like parts of Colorado that I always felt were pretty hardcore Republican. And I know that the Democrats were surprised about this because I talked to them frequently and they were pretty nervous about Election Day and what their majorities were like. They thought they might lose the state Senate. There was a chance that was going to happen. In reality, now they've got larger margins than they've had in a long time. And on top of that, you know, there were some really interesting results that Fish and I have been digging into in terms of specific counties. So El Paso County, for instance, the governor only lost by 4 percentage points. That's shocking, you know, in a Republican stronghold. In Douglas County, Polis barely lost. It was less but one percentage point. Marshall almost got a new suit because of it. And I'll let him tell that story. But you know, we've seen this interesting trend line in Colorado and some of these Republican strongholds. And again, this does kind of tie back into the CD3 stuff with just how much Colorado shifted politically. So Marshall, I'll kick it to you. What were some of the surprises that you felt like you saw in this election year and things that just popped out to you?
Everything you just mentioned, I really thought, in talking with Democrats and Republicans at the state house, I prefer, that's where I can get my hands on stuff, state house, state races more than congressional and federal races. But everyone seemed to be weary. Democrats were weary that they were going to lose ground or lose the Senate. Republicans, I spoke with Colin Larson like a week before the race, and he's poised to become House Minority Leader if he wants, and he gets beat by Tammy Story, who dropped down because she was going to get beat in her Senate race if she stayed based on redistricting. So she dropped down to the House and ran in this competitive race and won. And the fact that Democrats won all those competitive seats, that's surprising. But one thing I noticed in 2018 that I went back and looked at now, the sheriff's races and the clerk's races. In 2018, sheriff's races turned blue and some clerks turned blue. Arapahoe, Adams, primarily for the sheriffs, and even Jefferson for the clerk, I think was red before that. They held blue this time around easily. And before it was kind of shocking, like even certain like sheriff's races, you think even if you're a Democrat, you're like, okay, that's a job that a Republican should probably do. And that flipped in 2018 and held firm. So that shows to me a strengthening Democratic Party. The one outlier, which didn't reflect in this, is school board races. Like that's where it's like, well, like everything we learned this election is going to be thrown out the door when you have a school board race. School board issues one thing, school board race another.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like when you talk to Democrats, they're not totally willing to admit that Colorado is like a Democratic state yet. They always like, you know, Michael Bennett or you know John Hickenlooper, even Polis, like had conversations with them in recent days, and all of them have said, you know, no, it's still, I like what Polis said the best. He said it's an unaffiliated state, which unaffiliateds make up the largest percentage. And I can't tell if that's like, maybe to, you know, I don't know, celebrate their wins a little bit more or give themselves a little bit more credit for winning this year. But I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether or not that like that feeling fades away as if they're a state house and they have to think about like which policies are going to pass. Fish, how about you? What was something that you saw this year that surprised you?
You know, I'd agree with the state house. And to an extent, I look at the money and Republicans, in terms of outside money, really spent a lot on those Republican Senate contests. They paid no attention to some of the seats that flipped, like Colin Larson's. And they also spent a lot of money in the 8th, from the outside groups. You know, there, you know, Yadira Caraveo raised a lot of money in that contest compared to Barb Kirkmeyer. And I just think that the money difference, it really helps when the candidate raises money. But she, you know, and Caraveo got help from national Democratic groups, unlike Adam Frisch, but not nearly as much as Barb got. That was a really good race. That was two quality candidates from my perspective.
Yeah, and I think Caitlin, we had talked about like CD8 being an interesting one for you. Talk about what you saw there and what surprised you.
I think what surprised me is that, again, you know, and we've all talked about this, sort of just everyone was feeling sort of bullish about how Republicans were going to do and not so great about how Democrats were going to do. And I think this race was one of those examples. I think most people thought, including myself, that it would be, you know, Kirkmeyer's race to win. As Fish said, there was a lot of outside money supporting her. And you know, she was out on the campaign trail a lot. And I was talking with Republicans and their polling showed her ahead. So they were pretty confident. So I think that was a surprise for a lot of people. I even talked to Democrats out in that district who are like, who weren't sure that Caraveo was going to pull it off, mainly because even though she, you know, cleared the primary field early, she wasn't out there campaigning as much as I think Kirkmeyer was from the primary and then August, you know, July, August, September. I think the other surprise for me, and this is like a very sort of in the weeds thing, was just how well Michael Bennett did in that Senate race. I mean, he like double digit lead over Joe O'Day, and like talking to a lot of voters, I wasn't necessarily seeing like the unaffiliated voters, you know, break O'Day's way, but I also thought he was a stronger candidate than say Daryl Glenn. And I expected, you know, O'Day to maybe be just bring it a little in a little closer, especially since Bennett, who's never really broken 50%, finally broke 50% in this race pretty strongly. So that kind of surprised me. And going back to, you know, how you started this conversation, Jesse, you know, they might not want to call it a blue state, but I think for me, this sort of signals that, you know, everything that you've all mentioned signals that Colorado is sort of in the blue column, at least for the time being.
That was a good example of what we heard during that event. And our listeners can go and view this event and listen to it by visiting our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheColoradoSun. And all of our events are on YouTube. They are all free to access. And so if folks miss this or want to go back and re-listen or just hear it for the first time, just go to The Colorado Sun's YouTube channel.
Yes, that is one way. Another way also is that people can head to coloradosun.com/events. And that has all of our upcoming events where people can register as well as watch past events. So you can get caught up on the entire year if you want.
Well, and speaking of future events and the fact that we're almost at the end of the year, what else do we have lined up through the end of 2022?
Yeah, our last event for 2022 is going to be with the Colorado Sun's equity reporter, Tatiana Flowers, discussing the home ownership gap among Colorado's Black community. She's going to be co-moderating the event with Victoria Carradine, and they'll be speaking with Aisha T. Weeks, the managing director of Deerfield Fund for Black Wealth, Jice Johnson, the founder and chief visionary officer of the Black Business Initiative, Brandon Stepter, consultant and the speaker, and Theo TJ Wilson, the executive director of Shop Talk Live, Inc. And this will be on December 1st from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. And it'll be online and streaming.
Oh, that's great. So that is coming up quickly, December 1st at 5:30. And like our other events, this one is virtual and it's free. Where can people register?
Yes, it is free. So listeners can register for free at coloradosun.com/events. And you can watch the event at coloradosun.com/watch or our YouTube channel that you mentioned earlier. And we'll make sure to put these links in the show notes so people don't have to furiously write them down or try to remember them.
Oh, that sounds great, Christina. And how can people learn about our 2023 events? Because I know as a team and you as the event and marketing director, we've been meeting furiously really this fourth quarter of this year, planning out events for 2023. How can people stay on top of those?
Yeah, I'm really excited for some of the events we have coming up next year. And I think our listeners and readers and members are really going to enjoy them. The easiest way is we have a free monthly events email, and that'll include upcoming events, events to save the dates for, ways to watch previous events. So if our listeners go to coloradosun.com/events, there's a bright yellow box at the top of the screen and you click it and you can sign up. And again, this link will be in the show notes, so you don't have to furiously write it down.
Great. And I signed up for your event and marketing newsletter just so I make sure that I'm not missing anything internally. It's a good reminder.
Yeah, we try to do it early on just so people can put it on their calendars because we know how busy everyone gets. But yeah, we started a few months ago and it's quickly growing. So we enjoy seeing all of our listeners and readers get excited for our events because I think they're really great. And all of our reporters work really hard to bring great panelists to the virtual stage. And hopefully in 2023, we will have more in-person events. So we're really looking forward to that.
Sounds great, Christina. Thank you for dropping by today to talk to us about this. And thanks to everybody who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners at Pirate Audio. And if anyone out there in our listening community has questions or thoughts about the Daily Sunup, drop us a note at podcast@coloradosun.com. And I sincerely hope that you have a wonderful day and can join us for the next episode.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A couple of high-tech shipping containers are parked on a former used car lot in Denver, ready to start an urban farming revolution. The project launched a few months ago after two brothers teamed up to save the world and sell some sustainable arugula. The indoor Uller Gardens is growing the equivalent of a 10-acre farm on a dusty 7,500-square-foot lot south of downtown Denver. The startup only needs about 5 gallons of water per day per container, and the Millisore brothers hope to become a source for a year-round farm share program. It's official, Coloradans will be able to buy wine in grocery and convenience stores starting in March. After counting up the remaining votes from Denver, Proposition 125 changed direction and narrowly passed, letting Coloradans buy a bottle of wine at the grocery store. Grocery and convenience stores with a license to sell beer can begin selling wine on March 1st. According to the Department of Revenue, that's approximately 1,819 licensees as of June 2021. Out of 2.4 million votes, the split was 50.6% in favor, 49.4% against. Hundreds of the best ski racers continue to flock to the slopes of Copper Mountain, which has become the world's top early season training venue. For more than a decade, ski racers of all ages have flocked to Copper's north-facing slopes in October and November to jumpstart their season. With its race venues, superpipe, and indoor Woodward Training Center, Copper Mountain has supported the world's best skiers and snowboarders. The Colorado Ski Area's president and general manager says it's all part of the mountain's mission to become the athlete's mountain. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for the Colorado Dream Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.